escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Those complicated ones where now it feels like it's getting painted as he said, she said. The issue for me, though, he's still been charged.
Yes, he's already been charged and booked. And
correct.
Which is why it reads really weird in a way that this feels like it's new information that was not available to the district attorney, which I find somewhat hard to believe. Because you would think there would have been some sort of or some level of investigation into a potential crime scene before someone's charged.
You would think that they would at least have questioned him before they charged him.
Or at least gone to the apartment. Now, could they have cleaned it up? Sure, but then why would there have been pictures from before?
I don't know. I mean, obviously he's also painting out that there was clearly a request to make this go away from his ex-girlfriend, and that request was denied, and so here we are.
He's insinuating, you know.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
I mean, he's laying out the breadcrumbs, letting you draw the conclusion.
But that's usually what that reads to. Yeah.
I don't know. I just hope this gets sorted out before the season, because I do not think the thing that you want is, you do not want him playing this season with charges. Like, I've said on the record, I think if you get charged in this type of thing, you should be suspended. I also acknowledge these things have gotten muddy, and I'm not saying abandon the guy. I'm saying,
yeah,
I do not think you want someone playing with charges. Now, we have a long time before we get to there.
True. We have almost 3 months.
Yeah. So
realistically, we get into October. We have those two, you know, pretty big preseason games, which, to your point as well, I think will end up helping the Tigers out for their non-con tremendously. The fact that those are two programs that will not roll over just because it's a preseason game. Those are actual legitimate tune-ups.
The legitimate tune-ups against teams that are expected to be good.
Yes.
So,
and well-coached.
Yes. And that will physically provide you as good of a test as you're probably going to see this season. I mean, I know Purdue is potentially preseason number one, but I don't know if they're going to have the caliber of athlete that's going to be at Arkansas and Auburn.
I'd agree with that. You know, I think that Purdue team is going to be an experienced team.
Correct.
It's going to be an older team.
Good guard play.
Great guard play. Again, also very well coached.
Yep.
They've been here before. And again, like, that's going to be an interesting one because, to me, a Bahamar, a Maui, yes, these are top-tier programs that are going out and playing, but they're also all playing in a very different, very new environment. And sometimes those things are kind of weird. I mean, in Hawaii, in Maui, it's what, a high school gym on?
High school gym. Bahamar, I assume, like most good Bahamian, I assume it's going to be in a ballroom.
I think they have an actual like convention center where they play it at Nassau, if I remember correctly.
So that's different, obviously, from the Battle for Atlantis, which does look like that's one of my all-time favorites. Like, you can tell it's like just a ballroom where they host conventions.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take a quick break, because when we come back, we have news from Sam Hardiman over at the Daily Memphian that the city of Memphis is planning a $55 million renovation of AutoZone Park, including a mixed-use development, and how this could maybe, perhaps also tie into the Grizzlies and the city and their lease. We'll talk about that when we come back on the list right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, we do a little thing called the list. Let's get into it. AutoZone part. This comes to us from Sam Hardiman of the Daily Memphian. Sam, of course, will be on the Jeff Calkins show tomorrow with Jeff and George, as George will be filling in for me as I head out on vacation. The city of Memphis is planning a $55 million renovation of AutoZone Park and potential redevelopment of the area around the stadium, according to public records reviewed by the Daily Memphian. In June, the city signed a contract with the project management firm Viesta, which is also involved in the city's development at Liberty Park. The exhibits to the contract indicate the city's firmest commitment yet to securing the Memphis Redbirds' long-term future in Memphis, and fellow Redbirds management openly hinting at moving elsewhere if the park doesn't see substantial work. If you recall, that was another wonderful threat from last year, I believe last summer, roughly about this time.
Wasn't that, like, didn't we also hear that again around the time that 901 FC ended up leaving? It kind of re-entered the conversation a little bit.
I mean,
bit.
Obviously they were owned by the same private equity firm.
Yeah.
But I do recall, I feel like right before football season started, there was an additional pressure applied from that group. There was obviously the statement from when 901 FC lost or left, but I think there was if I recall correctly, there was a second one. The contract makes Viesta the project manager for what the documents describe as a phase two of the AutoZone Park improvements. It describes a plan to bring, quote, AutoZone Park back to the best-in-class asset. According to the exhibit, quote, the second phase is to complete deferred maintenance projects, begin to enhance fan experience, increase activation of the venue, and secure long-term tenancy of the Memphis Redbirds. During the second phase, plans for the new AutoZone Park of the future will evolve, offering alternative concepts to further enhance both game day experience and diversify event days to maximize activation. The phase will include new programming, economic impact analysis, financial forecasting, and capital formation analysis. The plan could include a, quote, public-private approach to both stadium renovation and surrounding mixed-use development opportunities. Sam writes that it's not clear what the contract means by, quote, surrounding mixed-use development opportunities. He, however, notes still the stadium across Union Avenue from the empty and somewhat disheveled field that was supposed to house the Walk at Union, a massive mixed-use project that never got off the ground. The empty field is also between AutoZone Park and FedEx Forum, the home of the Memphis Grizzlies and the University of Memphis men's basketball Tigers. The city and Grizzlies remain in negotiations about $550 million worth of renovations to the arena and a second long-term lease in Memphis. Memphis Mayor Paul Young said 2 weeks ago that the lease would not be done this summer, but he said that he and the Grizzlies remain interested in improving downtown. The contract describes the AutoZone Park renovations as well. Quote, the city of Memphis and the Memphis Redbirds have collaboratively extended the life of AutoZone Park. Both the team and venue contribute significantly to the importance of downtown Memphis. As the city is dedicated to a sustainable, vibrant, and safe downtown, AutoZone Park is a significant piece to that puzzle, the contract reads. According to Sam, the Memphis Redbirds officials did not return a request for comments. So we'll get more into the finances, but let's try to get through some corporate jargon and determine what this means. All right, first and foremost, I think what this means is a clear, deliberate approach of understanding what AutoZone Park means to downtown and an acknowledgement that it's not up to snuff. It's one thing for a private equity firm that owns a bunch of minor league teams to sit there and say, your facility's not up to snuff. By the way, we're not paying for it. Get it together. That's one thing. And then it's another thing for the city to basically begin planning and spending money. And to me, this is what Kevin and I were talking about last week, and I think he was spot on with this. We need to identify the institutions that matter, and we need to invest in those. And to me, this is clearly one of the two institutions from the professional landscape that I would say need to be invested in, the Grizzlies and AutoZone Park. So now let's get to the cost of the project. The contract sets out a fee structure for Viesta based on the project's projected cost of $55 million, giving the company a projected 3% sum, or 3% of that sum. I would presume that is a standard fee for...
That doesn't sound like anything crazy, out of the ordinary, exorbitant, anything like that.
That comes to about $1.65 million throughout the 3 years, or $550,000 a year. For project management, that sounds about right.
Yeah, for a project of this size, absolutely.
According to Sam, the city of Memphis said in a statement it was working on a funding plan with the Redbirds ownership. Quote, the city of Memphis is actively working with Diamond Sports Holding, City Finance, and a bond council to develop a comprehensive funding plan. The analysis is still underway and will be included in a detailed report expected by the end of the year. In the meantime, the city has already begun addressing life safety and deferred maintenance needs at the park, the statement reads. So let's get down to, all right, $55 million. What does that mean? Okay, so when we first started hearing about the financing of the arena renovations and the stadium renovations, my first thought was to accomplish the goals that they wanted to accomplish, that was not going to be enough money. When I hear $55 million for AutoZone Park, I'm actually fairly confident that that could be enough money. So there's two real key indications for me. Number one, when we first saw the renovations for Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, when the renovations came out, I was like, that's a new stadium.
Pretty much.
You knew it was going to include demolition. It was going to include, essentially, you were rebuilding one side of the stadium.
Yes.
And so then when you started looking at the ambitious, like, suites and whatnot, like, that just started to add into a lot of money. When you think about AutoZone Park, the structure and the bones are there. Basically, all it really needs is just to be...
It needs
clean.
A facelift. It needs a facelift, yeah. More or less. And that not is, even on the outside. It's mainly a facelift on some of the stuff on the inside.
Yeah, I think it's more fair. Like, it clearly needs new seats.
Absolutely. And
the concourses probably need to be modernized.
Sure.
The bathrooms...
Need
to be redone. But this is all stuff that is not, we're not trying to reconfigure the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
The stadium structure itself is fine. And like, I think back, it's been a while now, but when they last did the first big renovation, I want to say it was like $10 to $15 million, and it was largely praised. The bigger issue that I have right now with the Redbirds, and it's not really the Redbirds. It's the private equity firm that owns them.
Yeah.
Diamond Holdings. It's the upkeep and the having the staff to upkeep it, because they've completely gutted the staff over there. There's nowhere near the people that you need to maintain the facility. Everyone that's working on the grounds crew is understaffed and overtaxed. So my thing is, okay, I firmly believe in investing in this project, because this is, to me, it's like, we don't have FedEx Forum without AutoZone Park. AutoZone Park is the first thing in my lifetime where everyone that went in and saw it said, oh my God, I can't believe this happened in Memphis. And this is well before the Grizzlies. It was a beautiful ballpark. It was extremely well constructed. And it was just well done. Everything. It needs a facelift. But $55 million, to me, seems like that's a number that can really make this work. Now, getting into the other aspects of this, and I think part of the reason why I'm sure the city of Memphis was not upset that this story got out. One of the key behind-the-scenes complaints from the Grizzlies is they want a nicer neighborhood in downtown.
Yes.
They've been remarkably vague on what that means.
Not surprising.
But I don't think it takes a genius to recognize. I mean, Kevin and I have complained about this for years. I do not know of another downtown that has so many vacant lots. So if part of this money is going to revamping, I wouldn't even say revamping, developing the lots that are in between AutoZone Park and the Forum, I think that's certainly going to help.
That's a step in the right direction. Absolutely.
I still think the larger issue is downtown has never been a quote-unquote, like, social destination except for sports. Like, there's a brief period of time where you go downtown, but, like, it doesn't last forever. And it's definitely never been geared towards the families. AutoZone Park was the one exception to that. And to be clear, we've tried it at times. Peabody Place, Jillian's. It was designed to be attracting more family, family-friendly audiences. Didn't work. AutoZone Park, though, has been the one thing that has been able to consistently be a family opportunity. I was surprised. I went downtown to go to the Rendezvous with my family on Saturday, and that actually looked like one of the bigger crowds that I've seen because it was a game day. And I've never seen so many people coming into the game in Cardinals uniforms bringing their families, which might speak more to the current state of my Major League Baseball team. You want to talk about some attendance numbers that are alarming.
Get started.
But this is a franchise that, A, has the best fans in baseball, and
allegedly.
B, self-proclaimed.
Sure.
It's not alleged. We're just self-proclaimed.
Fair enough.
The bigger problem right now is the best fans in baseball are watching at home or not watching at all.
Yeah.
And that is
not good.
Drastic to watch. So, overall, I think this is incredibly encouraging.
Absolutely. And I do think it also stands for us to say, I mean, for anyone who's been to AutoZone Park recently, myself doing the Cardinals caravan, as well as a game or two, I do think all it needs really is a facelift. But I think a big part of that is a box standard minor league ballpark.
Yeah.
Is kind of cookie cutter.
Yeah, especially in the age. It's ironic to me that the era that AutoZone Park was built,
it kind of stands up.
Has lasted significantly longer than the era which FedEx Forum was built.
Agree.
For whatever reason, when we decided to go to the retro, I'm trying to remember exactly what the architectural term for it was, but it was like, they call it like the retro something ballpark. Basically, it begins with Camden Yards. And
still gorgeous, by the way.
Camden Yards. Then you have the artist formerly known as Jacobs Field, which I think now is Progressive. I think it's Progressive Park.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to technically lump whatever U.S. Cellular is now, New Comiskey. It's still...
Oh, Detroit?
The White Sox. Everyone always leaves that one out because it's not an example of what everyone wants to point to. Everyone always wants to point to Camden Yards, Jacobs Field, New Comerica, I guess you could throw in there, or Comerica Ballpark now. But all of them, if you look at the stadiums that were built in 1994 and you look at the stadiums that are being built in baseball today, much of the format is staying the same.
Yeah. Now, could that just be for baseball itself? You kind of can't really, mess with it too much because it requires.
Well, we tried in the 70s and the 80s.
But you know what I mean? The field itself requires so much space.
I actually think it's a little bit different. I think the difference to me is that in baseball, much of your business operation is still going to be people in seats.
Yeah, concourse as well as...
Correct. So the problem with FedEx Forum was FedEx Forum was built at a time when everyone was obsessed with...
sitting in the suites, getting
with copying what the Pistons did.
Yes.
With the Palace at Auburn Hills, which was a ton of suites. And then you saw Staples Center, a ton of suites. American Airlines Center, not arena. That the Dallas one... ton of suites. But then the new change for when FedEx Forum was built was...
And this was right after the Forum.
Correct. The whole rage at that point was courtside suites, as they called them, which are 18 rows up. Well, if you look at... set aside Chase in San Francisco, I think that one kind of doesn't count.
Yeah.
But if you look at most of the arenas that have been built since, what everybody has now been doing is recognizing, okay, suites are not the path. what we're going to do is build these giant lower bowls. The perfect example is Fiserv in Milwaukee. If you look at Fiserv,
it
is this massive lower bowl with a deck of suites on top and then a very small upper deck. Well, the problem with the Grizzlies is to reconfigure the arena, you're basically
gutting it.
I mean, and you're having to blow up the whole structure in terms of internally.
Yes, you have to essentially gut the forum.
Correct. And that's where the price starts getting jacked up.
And I think that's kind of one of the main differences in what we're seeing with, or that's the biggest difference, I'll say, with AutoZone and the forum is just the cost. And to an extent, even the Liberty, like the Liberty Bowl. Yes, the Liberty Bowl needed a ton of work done to it, but there was also secondary movement. It also went into the university's hands. It wasn't just funded by city and state. They're doing new things with it.
Where things start to get expensive is when you start reconfiguring seating.
Yes.
If you're not just adding on. And we're not in this era of adding on. If you look at all the stadiums, the arenas.
I don't think you can really do that in the
like, no one's, anyway. No one's trying to. Well, like, think about it in the NFL. No one's
building up.
No one's building a 100,000-seat stadium. Like, the biggest stadiums in our country are college football stadiums. And those are largely the byproduct of just, all right, we have a stadium, let's just expand.
They're just building up.
But
vertical.
Now the thing that you look at college athletics is everyone that's doing renovations, and now most people have put a lot of those projects on hold because they're trying to fund the rosters.
Yep.
What everyone has been trying to do is create more premium seating, but also decreasing capacity. And so because you're doing that, you're basically gutting one side of your stadium or gutting two sides of your stadium, and that just gets expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I think a good example of that is not, you know, unless Vanderbilt.
Correct.
Vandy has been under renovation for
like
3 years
now. Swear to God, a decade, it feels like.
Yeah. Oh, well, the initial, like, hey, guys, we're going to do something with this was probably about a decade
ago. But I feel like they've been kicking into an empty end zone since before the pandemic. Like
absolutely.
That hollowed out.
But, I mean, last season they were playing in front of cranes, for God's sake.
Is it open this year?
I think so.
I mean, I give Vandy credit.
They're getting it done.
The plan was sweet.
Yeah.
Like, good-looking stadium. As a aficionado of stadium renderings, hat tip. But, like, if you look at when Baylor built their new stadium, it was like 45,000 people. Like, most people have been, no one's trying, and I get it, Baylor's a private school, but, like.
Yeah, true.
The truth is, if you were allowed a lot of these SEC schools to build a brand new stadium from scratch, if money's up, no cost, I think they would look different than what they look like.
Agree. I don't think we're going to get those 90,000 plus seaters. They're going to be more in that, I'm thinking for SEC.
I mean, like,
that's 60 to,
I think they look a lot like NFL stadiums. Like,
yeah, that's 60 to 70, maybe 75, 80 on the bigger side.
I mean, obviously, Jerry's World is insane. But I think in terms of...
But even look at the newer ones. Like, SoFi isn't like that.
SoFi's not.
Allegiant's not.
I think Allegiant's like 65. U.S. Bank in Minneapolis.
Yep, that's their new one, I think, is around 70.
And they all kind of have that same layout. Look up, what's new Nissan Stadium going to be in Nashville? Like, that's the other thing. They always do the standing room only numbers. But, like, actual seating is usually around 65.
New Nissan Stadium for the Titans will have a capacity of 60,000.
There you go.
But, again, and, like, this is where I think a revamp of AutoZone will probably be the best thing for it, is they're not changing it, they're not expanding, they're not downsizing, they're actually just trying to make the experience better.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, all right, what does that thing really need? Well, we
shake up the concourse a little bit.
We finally... It took long enough, but we finally fixed the video board.
Oh, tough.
So we got that fixed. But, like, realistically, what does it need? Is, like, it needs new seats, it needs new bathrooms, and it probably needs to have the concourses.
Yeah, a team shop could be a little nice. Sure. You know, whatever it is.
But it's
the little things.
You're flipping it.
Yeah.
Versus, like, buying
let's remove everything.
Correct. You're not gutting it. Like, you're putting a new kitchen in. Like,
stove is going to look a little nicer.
It's going to have that, you know, maybe putting in a countertop. Or probably, let's be real. White people, like, we're knocking down a wall. We're going with an open concept.
Painting the cabinets.
Yeah, we're doing that. Like, that.
Yeah.
But to me, the larger part of this is, can they pull off the mixed-use development?
I think the biggest thing with that is it's going to come down to how much of that $55 million
yes.
actually goes. What's the split? What's the percentage of,
well,
this is what we need for AutoZone, and this is what we need for mixed-use development, and does that just come down to the project management company making that decision?
I'm sure part of that is the, hey, public-private.
Sure, absolutely.
The issue, though, that I see is we're not talking about, the area that they're talking about is not a it's not a renovation. It's building from the ground up. It's an empty field.
Yeah.
And so, like, I got to think about this. I was flipping through my dad's Memphis Business Journal over around Christmas. You know that new Sissy's Log Cabin? Everyone should be shopping at Robert Irwin Jewelers. But the building on Poplar,
yes,
at Laurelwood?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That thing costs like $7 million. So when you're building brand new buildings, like,
costs are high.
It gets high. My gut says to, like, really do. Now, that's the other thing, is like, you kind of need the plan to know, like, where the split becomes. But, like, I do not think I think $20 million would go pretty far for AutoZone Park in terms of
what they need to actually get
right,
done.
I presume the suites need some new carpet. Like, everything
they're
is
actually not that bad.
But, like, I think everything that they need is touch up. Like, they're
reasonable,
not,
and it's reasonable.
You're not knocking anything really down.
No. Or at least I wouldn't think so.
So,
but I guess the other half of that question is, what is the actual plan for the mixed-use space? Is it going to be complete just building? Is some of it going to be outdoors or open, that type of thing? We don't know. I mean, we're not at that point yet,
I don't think. A couple of things would be, well, who's the developer that takes the project? Because...
True.
There's certain developers that their answer to everything is, all right, let's build high-rise as a stretch, but let's build living space, apartments, whatnot. And
over
then,
top of some sort of outdoor shopping, restaurant,
yes,
walkable area.
Correct. Retail.
Yeah.
Now, is that what's best? I don't know. Like, to me, I mean, you see a lot of these, like, I think back to, I like the Denver example next to Coors Field. And mm-hmm. again, it's a little bit different. But what they did was they built a massive hotel and then they
got one of those.
They surrounded the massive hotel with basically like a super nice food court that also included restaurant space, a bar. Like, they made it kind of like the indoor-outdoor thing. But in the middle of it is, like, this giant food court.
Yeah.
And then, like, outside, like, in the courtyard area, they have, like, these video boards to, like, watch TV. And, like, they've made it.
So it is just, but it is, at the end of the day, just one big space. It isn't, like, a lot of the area adjacent to Bridgestone.
Correct. It's not like a strip of bars. Now, the problem, though, is...
I'm thinking on the other side of Bridgestone, where they have that, like, double giant food court.
Yeah, I mean...
But that's almost, like, still part of, like, a downtown area, not, like, an actual multi-purpose space.
My bigger issue is, how long is patio season? Because, like, when you think about Denver, like, the climate is... During baseball season, it's really mild. It was not a tough ass to ask people to go, like...
Hey, you know, like, we can't...
Like, part of the reason we are a quote-unquote bar town is most of the time you don't want to be outside.
Yeah, the fact that currently on July 29th at not almost 4 o'clock, it is 97 degrees and full sun.
Again, I'm happy, but I acknowledge...
Sorry, we're happy doing what we're doing right now, and we'd be happy walking around maybe to go in somewhere.
I'd be happy playing around.
Sure. How about just plopping a seat into a plastic seat at Bridge, or no, excuse me, at AutoZone to watch a ball game right
now? Is my wife going to be happy sitting outside having a cocktail?
Can I take a guess?
Your guess would be correct.
Okay.
Probably not. And again, we're not the only city that faces these challenges.
Sure.
But, like, I do think part of the whole issue of quote-unquote reimagining downtown is what looks nice and what is profitable
are probably different things.
Correct. Like, when you know...
Yeah.
Listen, the cafes of Paris work because, like, literally around Paris, it's like 80 degrees. Like...
Yeah.
It's a very different thing. Like...
And, I mean, to your point even, where are you going on vacation?
Right. I mean, I'm going to San Diego.
Weather there is... Last time I was out there was in August. Did not touch 85.
I don't think it's going to crack 80. Like, I'm not kidding. I'm bringing a jacket.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Great for walking around.
So...
Doing outdoor stuff.
But, like, that also doesn't mean that, like, you can't figure out something.
Agreed. I think that's why right now, I mean, for what it's worth...
It seems like we need nicer buildings. The problem, though, is when you need nicer buildings get more expensive.
I was going
to say... The overhead goes up significantly.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of why right now...
Like what was ever... Did anybody else's wife yell about the air conditioning bill last month? Because mine did. Now factor that in at a mass scale, trying to run a business.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm still encouraged, though.
I think that's what we need progress. To take from this. It is progress. It is encouraging. We just don't have the details yet.
Correct. And I'm,
which is not a bad thing.
But, again, they're hiring a firm that their job is to say, hey,
this is what you should do, and here's how we're going to spend
the money
to do it.
Here's what has worked so-and-so. Like, the key is figure out what has worked in Atlanta. What has worked? Like, where are the hot places?
Florida.
What has worked in Florida? Yes, perfect. Because Florida also has the other added element of it rains every day. Like, in the summer.
It does.
Like, yeah.
Every day.
What works at those places?
Now they have different challenges of people want to go to the beach.
Sure.
As opposed to places. But
they have plenty
still.
Of retail space. Like, what works there? That, to me, should be the target. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. Let's talk a little ball. We've had some injuries from the NFL. Also, we've got a SEC strength of schedule power ranking from Brandon Marcello. I want to discuss that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company. 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our big NFL news of the day is, yes, we may have the Pro Bowl game on Thursday, but we now know one of the starters. The Chargers will be starting Trey Lance. So some of you today learned that Trey Lance is now a Charger. That was weirdly one I did know.
For whatever reason, I still thought they had Easton Stick on their
roster. Oh, I'm sure that's the thing. The Hall of Fame game has gone from playing backups to, like, playing fourth team guys. Like, it's been a massive drop. Like, that's why, historically, the best bet of the Hall of Fame game was always just betting the under, but then Vegas started catching on. It's literally like betting a Army-Navy game. Like, it's the totals in the 30s. Like,
yeah, they're going to get theirs. Don't worry.
My thing about Trey Lance is I'm almost convinced part of the reason the Niners had to pay Brock Purdy, and again, I think they actually got a pretty good deal when you, all things considered, but, like, you had to pay Brock Purdy just to keep people from remembering how bad of a draft pick Trey Lance was and what you had to give up to get Trey Lance.
What an awful trade.
I mean, it was multiple firsts.
I can get this very quickly. Let's see. They traded up in exchange for first rounders in 21, 22, and 23, as well as a third rounder in 2022.
Now, I guess the one good thing is none of the quarterbacks that were taken after him have wound up being good either. Because, right, didn't it go, it went Trevor, Wilson, then Trey?
Yes.
And then Fields and Mac. I think Mac was the last.
Fields went 11. Mac Jones went 15 in the first round. And then
they took Brock in that draft.
Yes.
Brock was whatever, Mr. Irrelevant in that draft.
I want to see if there were any other like random sneaky quarterbacks that just like filtered through there that have been
decent.
That's
the 21 draft, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of have to, it's like, just.
Kyle Trask, Kellen Mond, Davis Mills, Ian Book, ugh. Sam Ellinger.
Yeah, I mean, so that's
not a great quarterback draft.
But that's also, it's like, why are you trading up in that draft?
That's what I don't understand, is that they traded up. Bad trade.
Trey Lance, who struggled to get on the field for the Cowboys even after Dak got hurt. So
twice.
Exactly. Brandon Marcello over at CBSSports.com has come up with the strength of schedule power ranking for the SEC. So I think I was a little surprised by who he put at number one. Could you guess who he put at number one? Whom he put?
And this is strength of schedule?
Correct.
Is it not Missouri?
Number one in terms of toughest. The other direction. You're correct in your assessment of going backwards.
Okay, I thought it was the opposite because I would think, if I'm thinking power rankings, what would be a good thing to have?
Correct.
Which to me would be Missouri's schedule.
Right.
Florida?
No, that was where my mind went. In fact, he even has Florida fifth. Vanderbilt
really?
At one. According to Brandon Marcello.
Vandy has a tough slate.
Yes. Vanderbilt hits the road to face four top 15 teams, including national title contenders Texas and Alabama. Diego Pavia always makes games interesting, but the Commodores might just buckle under the stress of the SEC's most difficult slate. I'm not sure what Vanderbilt was thinking, scheduling its three easiest games in the first month of the season, Charleston Southern, Georgia State, and Utah State. The back half of the schedule is brutal, with no breathing room or low-tier opponent providing a break from the likes of Alabama, LSU, Texas, and Tennessee. Number two, this would have been if you would have told me Florida was wrong, this would have been my next guess, was Mississippi State.
Yeah.
He has Mississippi State at number two.
Don't Mississippi State and Florida have very similar schedules, just changes based on home and away?
Yes. The other key caveat is Florida has Florida State and Miami.
Mississippi State and
has Arizona State.
Okay, they were good. They were very good last year.
Mississippi State. Jeff Lebby was 0-8 in the SEC last season, and the schedule in year two is probably more difficult. Yikes. The Bulldogs face four CFP teams from a year ago, the highest total in the country, and must travel to Florida, Texas A&M, and Missouri. MSU is more talented this fall, but the schedule does them no favors. The five-week stretch from mid-October through November doesn't include a bye and features road trips to Florida, Arkansas, and Missouri while hosting SEC contenders Texas and Georgia. Week one isn't a gimme either, with the Bulldogs traveling to in-state rival Southern Miss. They return home to face CFP participant Arizona State in week two. If you would have told me also that Florida wasn't the answer and Mississippi State wasn't the answer, my next guess would have been Arkansas. Sam Pittman is on the hot seat, and reaching bowl eligibility should be enough to save his job. Again, Brandon Marcello writes, against this schedule. Finding wins is difficult. The easiest game on the schedule is Arkansas State, but that carries significance because the Razorbacks have never played the Red Wolves after previous administrations refused to schedule them. What happens if the Hogs, dare we say, lose in Little Rock? Also on the non-conference schedule is last year's national runner-up, Notre Dame, and a trip to Memphis. In the SEC, the Hogs travel to Ole Miss, Tennessee, LSU, and rival Texas. Number four is Oklahoma. Number five is Florida. Six was Texas A&M. Seven was LSU. Eight was Texas. I am curious to see, though, if the coaches will still claim that Texas is going to wind up with like a super soft schedule, because that was the big argument. 9 was Kentucky, 10 was Alabama, 11 was Auburn, 12 is Ole Miss, 13 is South Carolina, 14 is Georgia. Also was a little surprising to me, because obviously they dropped Clemson and the home road split flips.
Mm-hmm.
But they have Alabama, Tennessee, and Texas.
And then their pay game as well. Okay, well, one of
their non-con is a joke.
One of them would have been a tougher game last year. Certainly, the Marshall game. Marshall was decent last year, but we all know what happened with that.
Well, and they have Georgia Tech is going to be in the Georgia Dome rather than
a true road game.
Yes, at Bobby Dodd Stadium.
Yeah, Austin Peay and Charlotte, those two are absolute jokes. Marshall, if that was last year, okay, you could give it a little bit of credence. I mean, they had a first-round pick on that team at least. But now they're all at Southern Miss.
15 is Tennessee. I'm pretty confident neither one of us are Joey Aguilar guys, although I can't tell if, because I'm not a Joey Aguilar guy, that you've adopted it, but I don't
see it.
Might Tennessee be a playoff team once again? Brandon writes, if the Volunteers take care of business at home and split road games against Alabama and Florida, they will have a clear runway. The season opener against Syracuse is severely underrated on the national scene. Trips to Mississippi State and Kentucky are laughers, and getting Arkansas and Vanderbilt at home should be easy wins. Circle the week 3 game against Georgia in Neyland Stadium. We'll know if the Vols are a legit contender after that evening. So, of course,
that last statement.
Well, the other talking point is, you know what the 98 season opened with, too. Syracuse.
Yeah.
That's been the Tennessee spin zone.
I mean, my thing is, by the last statement, I think, just fundamentally, I disagree with. It's week 3. So much can change between week 3 and week 15.
And also, like, are we really going to care if Georgia beats them?
No.
Like, in the end, they're still going to have... If they lose to Georgia and they split the Alabama and Florida games, I would like to know when's the last time they won at Alabama. I think it's 06. And then the last time they won at Florida. I know they won in 01 at Florida. I mean, that's the other thing, because I always remember the last time they played in Gainesville. I want to say maybe in like 04.
When the last time that Tennessee won on the road?
Correct, in Gainesville.
Let's see.
All right, so I can pull it up. The last time they won in Gainesville.
2003.
Yeah.
2003, when it was the number 12 and number 17 matchup. That was also a pretty early game in the season. It was late September.
Yeah, third. Let's see. So that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They've lost their last 10 trips. And then I'm nearly certain the last time they won in Tuscaloosa was Shula's last year in 06. And that was a disgusting football game. Alabama was starting a guy named, I think it was Spencer Pennington.
Let me see if I can't find
pretty
this.
Sure he was a walk-on. Yeah, that game was, it was like 10-3. It was disgusting.
I wonder if I can't find this real quick. Oh, geez. Okay, this splits it up. This one's a lot longer, so it splits it up a lot more. Oh, here we go. I'm
nearly certain it's 06. Maybe it's the 05 season. Maybe it's the 05 season or 04 season.
2003.
Yeah. It's that gross game.
51-43.
I thought there was a game in Tuscaloosa.
There was a really gross one, but Alabama won it 6-3.
Oh, maybe that's, I had it backwards, because maybe that was Rick Clawson going in?
Tuscaloosa was, their last win in Tuscaloosa was 2003, quintuple overtime, 51-43.
Yeah, that was, okay, there you go.
I think that, let's see, what's up with it? Oh, it's because that 2005 Alabama game was also vacated.
Okay.
That's why that sticks out as a weird one.
There we go. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. Let's go to Kristaps Porzingis.
Tingus Pingus.
Yes, he was asked about the different situations between Atlanta and Boston. Quote, it's a great situation for me to come in and contribute. Maybe even better than Boston, where it was championship or bust.
Ooh.
Here, the pressure isn't the same. It's easier to exceed expectations. That's a better position to be in. It's in our hands now, and I think we can surprise some people in the East. I do like it's a better situation because there's just no pressure.
Good job, Tingus.
There we go. Want to thank Mark Giannotto for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Mark, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.